Broadcasting from InnieUpMagazine.com and 620 WDAE AM, the sports animal in Tampa Bay, Florida.
With your hosts, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's time to Ante Up. It's January 16th, 2009, and you're listening to the best poker podcast on the internet. And you know what I hate about having this show, Scott?
You hate something about this show?
I hate having the show because after having a night like last night, instead of trying to forget what happened, you know, just a good poker player can just, you know, say, all right, it was a bad night and move on. But no, I have to relive it.
Yes.
In the drive over here with you.
Yes.
I have to relive it on the show for thousands and thousands of people to listen to.
That's right.
Gonna have to relive it again tomorrow and the next day because I'm in business with you. And yeah, it was a brutal night.
Yeah, you don't take home game losses well, do you?
Well, it's not.
Now, come on, admit it.
I don't take them well. But it's not even that. If I didn't have to relive it, it wouldn't be as bad. But we're gonna talk about it tonight and today, and it's just it was the worst night of poker I've had. Where, you know how they say, when you combine good luck with good play, the guy's unstoppable. Well, it was the exact opposite for me. It was bad play and bad luck on top of it. I had just horrible timing, cold, cold, cold deck. You know, they say there's a cold snap coming through America right now. Yeah, well, it hit me really hard, right in the face. You know, and speaking of getting hit in the face, you got hit in the face last night too with the deck.
Yeah, yeah, it's nice when that happens, isn't it?
It's really worse too when you're drunk. And winning. It's like we can't even beat a drunk Scott Long tonight. You just hit every... No matter what you did, you couldn't do anything wrong. You had a good night.
That's right. I'm off to a good start this year.
Yeah, I didn't play any other home games, so I didn't know how you'd there. But,
You know, I got to say, I just love the home game. You know, online is cool for all the variety. And
right.
Playing in a casino I love because I like to touch the chips and the cards and stuff. And the home game is the perfect marriage to that.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a lot of fun.
And we play good variety games. And the absolute best thing about our home games are that... there's not big swings.
Yeah, not really.
I mean, generally, it's really odd for you to drop what you did, and very odd for me to win as much as I did. Most people, you know, in the game Saturday, I won $20, and I was the fourth best out of the six players.
I know.
That's an amazing home game, I think.
Yeah, I think it's pretty balanced, and it's just sometimes it is. And that's what's weird. That's an interesting topic, too. You know how a lot of times when guys really don't know how to play the game, they just get together with their buddies and they play poker,
yeah,
and it's just luck. It's whoever had the best cards that night wins. What, does it turn out to be that way, too, when you start to play with people of equal caliber, you know, and the home game starts to round out? Does it end up being that way again, where, okay, we're all really good, we're all real, you know, we're all decent or whatever, and we're all folding the right amount of hands and playing the right amount of hands and everything, and does luck, does it all of a sudden become the same exact scenario where now it's luck again?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know what I mean? Not luck, but but getting hit with
the
deck.
But luck plays a little bigger factor. That is a very fascinating topic.
I wonder. You know, I was reading an article about Tom Dwan, and we'll be talking about him a little bit later, but it was a feature story of him in Card Player, and he talks about how, you know, the top 9 players in the world can all play together and play against each other, and it's just a matter of who adopts better that night to each other's play. So again, is it really skill, or is it, if you're all equal, you know, equal talent, then is it the cards?
Well, that's truly the skill, I think, in a home game, is being able to change your play on the night, because people get used to playing how they know their opponents play.
Right. But anyway, I mean, I always have fun, and whether it's me steaming off something or whatever, or getting one outed, you know, whatever. But I still have a lot of fun, regardless of the amount. And I hadn't had a losing session in so long in the home game that, you know, it was humbling, I should say.
Humbling.
It was pretty humbling.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it was a long ride home.
Yeah, not for me. But
no, well, you don't even remember the ride home because you were so stinking drunk from Bush.
Good thing I had Frank with my DD, so that was very nice.
But, you know, we've been so busy lately that I hadn't had time really to read a lot of the articles. But like I said, I read that Tom Dwan one, and then I picked up an article in the recent Bluff magazine from Greg Raymer. He wrote this column I thought was pretty interesting. I thought we should talk about it today. He talks about it, the title of the column was Battle of the Blinds. And you know, the World Series champ said that he has an interesting theory when the action folds all the way around to you and you're in the small blind. He made up this little chart, and of course he didn't share the chart with anybody.
No, of course not, yeah.
But he did share the premise of the chart.
You got to pay for that chart.
Yeah, but he did share the premise of the chart. And he said this chart can be used to determine when it's profitable in that situation to just shove all in.
All in. Everything.
I mean, you know how aggressive he is, obviously. We've seen him bust out of so many tournaments just on a bluff or on all-in things. But he does caution that it's not always the optimal play, but he does say this is when it's profitable.
Okay.
So real quick, here it is. It's a chart that has three columns. The first is when the big blind calls you perfectly, as if he could see your whole cards. All right. The second column is when they would call you with the top 20% of hands. And again, whatever those 20% hands are, I'm sure he has his own 20%. And then the final column is top 10% hands they would call you with. He says you obviously need to know what category the big blind falls in. In this situation, you know, must call for this particular type of action. So his example, here's an example. And I want to know what you think. You have 24 big blinds, and it's near the bubble of the tournament.
That's awesome for me.
Yeah, it's what you're used to. So that's why I gave you this scenario. You know you can't fold your way to the money, so you know you got to pick up a pot or two, or at least survive a couple more rounds. He says your big blind opponent has 20 big blinds and will only call you with the top 10% of hands. His chart says you can shove here with any two cards. He said that this means 90% of the time you'll win without a showdown.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And even if you are up against the top 10% of the hands, even three deuce suited, tray deuce suited, whatever, still has 30% equity, making the play profitable. He breaks it down some more and says only 7% of the time is this move a disaster. I have one more example real quick.
All right.
If you have ace-king suited and can predict your big blind opponent will call with top 20% of the hands, you can shove an infinite number of big blinds because you have more than 50% equity if called. Infinite hands.
Infinite's a big number.
Infinite blinds. How big's your stack? Infinity. You can't count it. It never stops growing. But this column really, Scott, is a perfect example of why I'm talking and writing about poker and not playing it for a living. Because, I mean, I guess you have to see the chart to feel a little bit better about the whole shoving idea. But really, to pick up a blind and a half, you're going to shove just because you think he's going to be in the 10 or 20% or not. You know,
Separates us from world champions.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be. Because, sure, I understand the mathematical thing. I understand the whole sit and go, the shoving. You know, there's all these terms.
Right.
But in this case, do you really want to put your tournament life on the line for a blind and a half? I mean, I guess maybe there's antes involved at some point if he's playing in that kind of a tournament in the bubble. But really? Because it's profitable? I think this gets back to that conversation we had with Cantu, right? Where, you know, okay, so you have your net worths out there, but you know you have the right pot odds to call. Do you do it? No. There's certain times where you just don't do it, right?
Well, I think it goes back to the first thing you said. That it may not be maybe profitable, but it may not be optimal.
Right.
And that's always the key in a freeze-out tournament is that even if you're getting the right odds to call, if you're wrong, you're out.
Yeah.
Can't rebuy, you're done. So maybe that doesn't, you know, just because you have the odds doesn't mean get correct to do so.
See, and he has this, I mean, I'm not sure if he follows it religiously, but it just seems like if he thinks he's got a bead on the guy on his left, he'll make this play every time. If it's the right, you know.
Well, I've always wondered too, you know, pros, because they have to write these columns. I don't know a whole lot of pros that look forward to writing stuff and have a bevy of topics in their brains. You know, it could be wrong.
Right.
So, you know, when you're up against a deadline, you got to come up with something. I think a lot of this stuff, I don't want to say manufactured, that seems like a wrong word, but you take some examples from your play and then find a way to turn them into a column that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I don't think Raymer's this way, because Raymer's just, you know, a human machine in his brain. But but I think ultimately what I'm trying to say is I think he's just trying to shine a little light on how you need to be a little more aggressive in the small blind heads up.
Yeah.
And then to support it, he went into all this math. So if you take away from the fact that I think you need to be a little more aggressive in the small blind, that's probably good enough, right?
Yeah, I guess so. It's just the whole you're only going to get called by a better hand. So, I mean, you're only going to get called by a guy who's... Well, I mean, I guess if you got called there, you'd still have four big blinds and you could double up or whatever one more time. But, yeah, it just seemed to me like, wow. That's something that, you know, I just... You know, of course, when I do it, they wake up with aces. All right, so speaking of me playing, you know how I'm always put on the spot with the hand of the week?
Yeah, this is kind of funny because you've got a hand here and then I got a hand, so there are three hands in this show.
A lot of strategy. Part of our new look at you know, how to do the show.
Hands across the Anti-Up Nation.
All right, so I had this hand and I want to know how you would play it.
All right.
Now, I know you're not an Element Hold'em specialist, but you've been...
I would call $12 for a gut shot and hit it. That's how I'd play.
Yeah, that's how you did it last night. So, I was playing Heads Up online this week. It was a 50-cent, $1, no limit hold'em.
Yeah.
I'm in the big blind. I have the Ace of Hearts and the Six of Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
He was very aggressive, this guy, the whole time. And he already had me down. I bought in for 100. Already had me down to about 80. He raised on the button, which he did every time on the button, no matter what, which is fine. You know, I usually just adjust to it when I exploit it later. But he did it every time. So this time I decided to just call. Normally I might re-raise with a hand like this, but I was trying to win a big pot. So I just called, and the flop, now I have ace, six of hearts.
Right.
Flop comes.
That's suited, correct?
Six of spades, six of diamonds, three of hearts.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I have a set of sixes, trips, and I have a top kicker.
Right.
What would you do at this point?
Now,
there's about $6 in the pot, and he has me way covered because he had 100 and I had 80. So he has
140, 80. Well, I think my normal MO in this kind of tournament is to
check. It's not a tournament. It's a cash game.
I mean, this kind of style is to check raise a player like that, and I'll do it even if I don't hit on that flop, so it's kind of disguised. So okay. I think that's what I'd be doing here.
So you would check with intent.
Do a check raise, not just necessarily because I had the sixes, but because...
You know he's aggressive, so you know he's
going to
bet.
Exactly. He might bet, and then he may not give me credit when I check raise because I've been doing it before.
All right, that's what I would do. I did the same thing. I checked knowing he'd bet. With $6 in the pot, he bet $5. So what would you bet now? Now he's bet $5, and you said you're going to check raise. What would you make it?
I'd probably just mid-raise.
So you just make it 10?
Yeah, I like to play with people like this.
Okay, so I just called, making it look like I might have been on a straight draw or have losers.
Okay.
All right, but yeah, I might have. Min-raising, I don't know if I would have min-raised, but... If I was going to raise, it probably would have been a lot. So I checked.
And the only reason I would min raise is because that usually drives aggressive players batty. Yeah. Not that I think it's an optimal play, but
right. It
gets in their head.
Okay. So I called, just hoping to make it look like a draw, and then he'd try to force me on the next street, and then I would raise there. So that's what I was thinking. Okay. So now the turn is the eight of spades. Okay. So now there's the six of spades, six of diamonds, three of hearts, eight of spades, and there's $16 in the pot. Not accounting for rig. There was about 15 or so in the pot. But anyway, at this point, what would you do now? Now you know that eight of spades came off, so you still have your three sixes with the ace kicker, and there's about 16 in the pot. What would you do now?
I'm not going to let him get a free card for this spades, even though I don't think he has spades. So I'm betting up, I don't know, 8 or 9, 10,
okay.
Maybe.
Okay. I checked again, hoping to check raise because I had a feeling he was going to bet. So I checked. He bets $5. At this point, you would have bet out. So now that he's bet five into you and you're playing as me,
yeah.
How much do you raise to now?
I have to raise now. I don't know. I'll bump it up to 15 or something.
Okay. I made it 18.
Okay.
Right. So about the same.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah. Now, remember, at that point, too, I only have I don't have that much left. I mean, I have enough. I started with 80, but I mean, I'm getting close to where if he's shoved, I might have to call or whatever. So after some deliberation, he calls. River's a queen of spades. What would you do? Your first act.
So you're out of position. So this is where it gets tricky. This is why I really wanted to get out of the hand beforehand. Because now if you check, then he's going to take a stab at it. And if you bet, he can. If he's caught you, he's going to raise you. Or even if he hasn't caught you. I might put a small kind of blocking bet out. I don't know, what's in the pot again? 30 or something?
Well, it was 16 before, then 5 and 5. So about 26, 25.
26, I don't know, probably $6. $6.
Okay, I bet 10.
Okay.
And he min-raised me. So, what'd you do now?
Well, you got to call. I mean, your head's up.
Just a call, right? You wouldn't do anything more because of spades?
No, I'm not going to raise it.
So, I just type in, show me the flush, and then I call. And he turns over the five of spades and the six of spades.
Oh, wow.
So, I had him dead to run a runner because he had 5-6 and I had...
Wow, two players with a heads up and with
heads
K-6s.
Up. The K-6s
wow.
Come out. Which, you know, and I and
this was online, right?
It was online, of course.
No,
So anyway, what is there any way to play it differently? Do you think that I probably should have, instead of checking to him earlier, because he's got that six, there's no way I get him off his hand, right? There's no way.
Yeah, I mean, you're ultimately going to lose this anyhow, so I don't think it's really worth worrying about because, I mean, heads up, you know, he's got three sixes. He's calling no matter what you do.
No matter what I do there.
Yeah.
And then I get back to the whole...
It's kind of like, you know, taking a bullet to the head or being tortured at Guantanamo. Just give me the bullet to the head. You know, I'm going to die either way.
Now, the thing I wonder about is the random card generator.
Uh-huh, right.
And when I bring this up, it's not to not to start any arguments or anything, but I wonder if
we got to build some buzz for our conspiracytheorypoker.com site.
Well, if I had shoved right earlier and he called with the three sixes, would the flush have gotten there then? Now you can't think that way.
Well, I mean, you can, I guess, because I don't still quite understand exactly when the cards are generated. So,
yeah.
I mean, you could be right, but you're going to drive yourself bad if you think about that.
Well, no, that's what all I do. I sit home and drive myself crazy.
Yeah, trust me, I know.
Try sleeping last night after what you did to me. Well, the story does have a good ending, though.
Oh, does it? All right, very good.
After that, I won a couple of small pots. Yeah, I was feeling better afterwards, so I won a couple of small pots, got it back up to about 40, then won back-to-back all-ins when I had the nut straight on one hand, and he had top pair. And then I had the second nut flush, and he just had trips, and the board didn't pair. So I ended up winning like $60 against him. So it was worth it because I knew he was so aggressive. I can make some big hands.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's the type of player you want to play against.
Yeah, but that one hand, I was just like, you've got to be kidding me, you know? Because he had me down like $20. I thought, here, I'm going to make some of my money back now, and then we can really play again. And he has the K6, or I had the K6. So the K6 came out. I don't know however you want to say it, but. It was brutal. So there's no other way to play that hand, right? There's
no other way.
There's no way I can get away from it.
It was your destiny to lose.
All right, well, you got a hand, you said.
Well, yeah, speaking of destiny to lose, let's have a little fun here because this was a hand that I played at a local multi-table at Silks.
Uh-huh.
And there were five players in this hand all the way to the end. And I think there's a compelling case to be made for how all five of us played this terribly. Absolutely, they stunk up the joint, five players in one hand. So what I want from you and the nation is, who played this the worst?
Well, it's good to know that you can suck elsewhere, not just in the home game.
Oh, exactly, yeah. I've got a long history of sucking. all right, so here's the situation, and I'll run through this pretty quickly because we don't want to make three hands of the week today.
Right.
But it's prettier. Second level, blinds are 50-100. The pre-flop... under the gun plus two limps with 8-5 suited. That's 8-5 as in snowman.
Wow.
All right.
Uh-huh.
I'm under the gun plus three. I limp with ace queen offsuit.
Hmm.
The under the gun plus four raises 3x with jack. The button calls with ace queen. And the small blind calls with ace queen.
Three ace queens.
And then the under gun plus two and me both. Call this race.
Wow.
All right, so we got three ace queens going up against a pair of jacks and some jack nut with 8-5.
Jack nut.
Okay, so the flop comes tray 4-8. No flushes will get on here, so it's
okay.
All right, and it's checked around.
Holy cow.
All right, the turn brings a 5, and now the 8-5 guy gets excited with his top two. And bets 300. Everyone just calls. The river, a juicy little deuce. The 8-5 guy bets 800. The jack guy folds, but all of us with aces call. You chop this pot three ways.
Oh my God. Where to begin?
Was there anybody that played this anywhere near decently? Anywhere near decently?
Well, no. No. I mean, I guess there's a case to say that the button with ace-queen really didn't make a bad play by just calling with ace-queen, because he's got position, and if an ace comes...
Yeah, but she was also... her big problem was checking the flop when she was last act.
No, I'm just going through the stages here.
Yeah.
I'm saying early on, you know, 8-5, idiot. You not limping with it, idiot. Jack's only 3x with two guys and a bunch of guys behind him. Probably should have raised a little more than that. Ace queen calling with guys behind him to act. I mean, I guess the button, like I said, that's not a really bad play because now you're against some serious pot odds and you have position. Small blind with ace queen calling. Yeah, you know, you're out of position. And, you know, if anything, I would probably pop it there to really define my hand or define their hands. Or I'd fold. I wouldn't probably just call. And then you calling, and then the 8-5 guy suited. I mean, I don't know. Those are all over, in the first beginning. one guy, I think they all played it wrong there, except for maybe the button.
Yeah, pre-flop was probably all wrong.
And then after the flop, how does the jacks check?
Well, yeah, here's the thing with the jacks. I mean, you know, if you're going to raise pre-flop with jacks, I mean, what kind of flop are you looking for?
I know. Except for a jack on the flop.
8-high rainbow?
Yeah.
With no straight? I mean, if you're hoping to hit a set, then you're not raising.
What's hilarious is he finishes last in the hand, too.
Well, no, he actually was smart enough to fold on the river. So, yeah, I mean, I guess
he
ended
up making the worst hand out of
everybody involved. But he didn't put the 800 to the end like our Jack Nut with the 8-5.
Oh, my God. So then the 8-5 guy bets 300 into a huge pot. I mean, I would think at that, well, let's see, everyone bet
300 times 5 plus the big blind.
Yeah, 1,500, almost 1,600 in a pot, and he bets 300. So that was a poor bet because he let everybody catch up. Oh, man, it was just terrible. I think you're all equally stupid.
Yeah. And I would have folded on any flop bet.
Yeah.
Because I don't really like ace-queen anyhow, but, you know, figured I can
get it. So why do you call on the turn, hoping to hit your gut shot?
Well, on the turn, it was because he only bet 300. And as you said, that huge thing, and I'm like, I got a gut shot. If, you know, if I hit an ace or a queen, I might still could be good.
Yeah.
Which I didn't, obviously I wouldn't have been. And of course I hit it. I'm like, all right, great. And then, but then you know, you couldn't.
You can't really get a big bet out of it because somebody could have a six.
Exactly.
Yeah, or 6-7.
But then you have this guy with 8-5 who's doing the betting. I mean, I don't know how you can. You know, again, I'm not trying to criticize because I play this horribly too, but I can't imagine how you have 8-5.
I know.
You're in a hand with four other opponents
who all called raises.
Who all called raises preflop and not think that any of them have an
wheel.
Ace.
Wow, that's a terrible, terrible, terrible hand.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's our humor for this week's show. It's it started out just funny to see three people turn over ace queen, and then when I started thinking about him, I immediately scribbled down all the details in his hand because I'm like, wow.
So did you bring like a little pad with you or whatever? Or?
Well, yeah, I was doing a little work at the room that night, so I just happened to have a pad, and of course, and then the 8-5 guy was watching me as I was writing anything down.
That is sweet.
Well, last week we introduced the Anti-Up News Desk.
Yes.
We got some good feedback on it.
I like it.
So we'll give it a little whirl here and see how it works.
You can be the anchor again.
Ooh, excellent.
I'll be the funny guy.
We'll let the nation be the judge of that.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, you ready?
Yep.
Get the little teletype machine going?
Uh-huh.
All right. PokerNews.com says in a motion to dismiss the lawsuit filed by Cloney Gowan, Tiltware LLC, quote, asserts that the originally named players were erroneously included and asked for them to be removed from the action, while also alleging that the lawsuit itself is wrongfully constructed, and even if it had merit, would be a relatively simple breach of oral contract with Tiltware and only one of the defendants, Raymond Bitar.
Wow. So, I mean, they're talking about Mattiso and Ivy and all the guys who were listed.
Yeah, all that stuff we thought was kind of crazy. That's exactly what they're saying.
Yeah, I really have to wonder what's the... I think they're going to want to settle out of court for a much lower price. You have to wonder what the hell's going on there.
Yeah, who knows? Joe Hashem, Tony G, and Lee Nelson were among the first 8 inductees to the Australian Poker Hall of Fame.
Cool.
Poker Network reported.
They come from a land down under.
That's a lot of good players down there.
Absolutely. And those three are perfectly the three that should be in the hall.
Yeah, and I left out a couple other big names on that list. Mel Judo was one of them.
Mel Judo, yeah. Former hairdresser.
Ooh, yes.
You could use a little spicing up there, buddy.
Well, thank you.
A couple highlights, maybe.
I appreciate that. I'm going to hit Evita after the show. The Korea Times reports that police apprehended a 43-year-old man for killing his longtime friend after losing money in a poker game. The man killed his friend, who he had known for 20 years,
oh my God,
with a blunt weapon, as the victim was quitting the game after a series of wins, police said. He was said to have lost about 50,000 won, which is their currency there, which I think is funny. You lose,
I tell you
still
what,
win.
You were pretty close to this guy's fate last night.
We haven't known each other for 20 years. You still got another...
pretty close, though. We've known each other for a long time now. You were pretty close to losing it, man.
I mean, talk about losing, hit and run.
Yeah, oh, man.
This is run and hit.
Hit and hit.
Doyle Brunson, who once beat so-called untreatable cancer himself, has asked on his blog that readers send words of encouragement to a 15-year-old niece of a longtime friend. The El Paso Times reports Margaret Hussman is battling lung cancer.
That's a shame.
So, yeah, so check out his blog and do what you can to help her out. And then finally, Tom Dwan, better known online as Dur. Is that right?
Dur.
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 Dur. Lots of R's.
Yeah, Dur. And I know what, too? The R's, the amount of R's he uses depend on what site he's on.
Oh.
Like some sites did not 4 R's.
Sometimes. Excellent.
Fewer or more or whatever. But
excellent. But anyhow, he recently made a challenge to anyone in the world except for his friend Phil Galfond.
Galfond.
Bluff Magazine reports 50,000 hands, heads up, Chris. No limit hold'em or pot limit Omaha. 200, 400 stakes.
Minimum
of 4 tables.
Four tables.
If his challenger's ahead after 50,000 hands, he'll pay him 1.5 million pencils. but if he is ahead, the challenger will pay him 500,000. quite a bit less.
Now, I know that Phil Ivey has accepted it. And okay. I've read somewhere that Benjamin and Antonius have accepted, although I haven't seen that in any other accounts than this one I saw. But definitely Ivey. Now, I think that Durr is scary good, and I think Ivey is scary good. But I have a prediction. Someone's going to lose a lot of money. One way or the other. But I mean, what do you think about this, Scott? Is it pure arrogance, or is this guy just trying to get more popular? What's the deal? Why would you want to do this?
Well, you know, I don't know his cash flow situation, so I can't speak to how smart it is of a financial risk.
Right.
But you know, I think you nailed the head with the hammer, and then it hurt your finger, and you got it all right. you know, I was talking to a couple of my journalism friends this week, because there's some upstart website that hired Joe the Plumber,
yeah,
to go over to Israel and
cover the war.
Yeah. And of course, everybody's guffawing, and journalists are like, "Oh my God, what kind of credentials does he have?" You know, as they sip their Chardonnay, and then I'm like, "It's freaking genius." Of course, no one thinks Joe the Plumber's going to go over there and become the next Ernie Pyle. But everybody in the world knows who this website is now because of this marketing. It's just like the whole Golden Palace Casino. You know, they buy the, you know, the potato chip that looks like Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
So, you know, if nothing else, this guy is getting people to talk about him.
Yeah.
And like I said, if he can afford to lose whatever it is that he's going to lose, you know, he can't put a price on that kind of exposure. So maybe that's part of it.
We got to get Joe Sixpack to cover the World Series for India Magazine. We'll get some free publicity out of that. Okay, well, I hear the Donkey Gear hotline.
Absolutely.
813-448-1120. You call that number, and we'll give you something pretty from donkeygear.net.
Hey, guys. This is Mark from Chicago. I got cut off last week on the Donkey Gear hotline. My story was about a tournament I was playing at Caesars last year where there were about a dozen German kids that were in town playing together in a big tournament, and I had about four of these guys at my table. They were speaking German nonstop. I called the floor over, complained to the dealers about four times until finally they pushed two of us out of a hand, and these two German guys were eventually heads up. The one guy went all in, and while the other guy's thinking, the one German says, "I have two pair." And the guy folds, he flips over two pair, and the other guy threw away pocket aces. And, you know, the guy that announced his hand took the pot. I went nuts, and the floor basically gave them their fifth warning, and that was pretty much it. So, very frustrating, obvious collusion going on there. These guys are protecting each other and driving people out of pots, and they did nothing about it. So that's basically it. I guess I get a T-shirt.
Well, I'm glad he called in, Scott.
Yes.
I'm glad that we got the full clip on the air, and I wouldn't stand for it. I wouldn't stand for it. I mean, after the second warning, or even the first warning, really, after that, the next time it happens, either I'm getting up and leaving, or I'm making a real big stink.
Well, you know, I'm walking down to the casino bookstore and buying a German dictionary.
Yeah.
And coming back and telling these folks what I really think of them. That's what I would do.
Achtung! Achtung!
All right, well, Mark, you're not going to get two shirts out of us.
Nah.
But anybody else that calls in, you'll be happy to send a lovely T-shirt from Donkey Gear, which offers poker wear geared towards those who like to be the donkey or those trying to call it the donkey. But it's more than just funny T-shirts. Of course, there are hats, poker chips, tables, dealer buttons, cards, books, and other accessories. Get it all at donkeygear.net.
One last time, 813-448-1120. Give us a ring.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another one-minute mystery. The Case of the Charity Ball. This week, we find ourselves in a charity No Limit Hold'em tournament in Las Vegas.
My wife, she gets involved with charity functions. I'm too busy. On call. You understand.
The tournament starts with about 120 players, many of which are pros. The tournament pays the final table, but only the top three spots are really significant prizes. There are 21 left in the tournament, and the blinds just went to 1K, 2K. We would normally be at a full 10-seat table, but this is just before a table break, and we're playing seven-handed. In this hand, there is only one pro at the table, two to my left, and he folds under the gun plus one. We're going to be sitting in the big blind this hand with 15k of chips. It folds around to the cutoff, who moves all in for 8k. Now, the cutoff's on a short stack because when we had 8k 20 minutes ago and we're playing eight-handed and moved all in under the gun with queen-queen, we got a call from them with ace-ace and we hit a queen on the river to double up. But the hand gets more interesting. The small blind acts as if she's going to fold, then changes her mind and moves all her chips in, and she has 10.5k. And now it gets really interesting. In the big blind, you look down at ace-king off. So here's the dilemma. What's your best move here?
I think I predicted last week that if we have to call here, but if we do call, we're probably in a race with one person and dominating another person.
Yeah, I think you talked me into the fact that we need to double up in this tournament. So,
all right, so
that's worth the risk.
Let's hear what he has to say.
This is one of the most amazing hands that I've come across in that everybody had an opinion on what to do, but the demographics of those opinions were very intriguing.
It's amazing how different people see things different ways.
I'll admit, I took some time to think about this. With an M of 5, I called here wanting to build some chips and making a run at the top 3. Interestingly, not only one, but two pros told me that this was a clear fold. What are the possible ranges here? I figure 8-8 and maybe something like King X or 8-8 versus 10-10. I figure either my ace is good or my king is good, and that's 20% getting 5-1. That's a pretty good case for folding. But at the same time, coming in 10th in this tournament is no better than coming in 21st. And with an M of 5 and a premium hand, it's a sketchy but valid case for a call. If I do get lucky, I have 37k in chips, above average for the first time since the second break, and I make a run at the top money. In the end, when I made the call, I was up against 8-8 and King 10. The river was an 8 for a set, and the original raiser took the main pot, and I took the side pot of about 2.5k. I'm going to go out a few hands later after that running into pocket aces again. But here's the most interesting thing. The pro two to my left, who told me he would have laid this down, also had 15k in chips at this point in the tournament and will go on to go out 8th. Talk about food for thought. Until next time, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com reminding you to keep your eye on the prize.
Wow, it's exactly what it was.
Yeah, and lots of interesting things to think about.
Yeah, and the way the pros were talking to him about it's a fold and then clear fold. But I agree with Columbo. I think you need to call there. I think you need to make some money in this tournament. Catch chips, I mean. Otherwise, you're not going to get anything. Tough situation there to know that one of your kings are dead and that you're racing. But I would have called. There's no doubt I would have called.
Twiff.com lets you skip the middleman and buy your poker chips, tables, gifts, and much, much more straight from the factory at unbelievable savings. Use the famous Twiff countdown to group your purchases with others for free shipping. That's Twiff.com, direct from Asia at Asia prices.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
All right, Chris, well, we're hoping for a very nice announcement on next week's show.
Yeah. We're hoping it's coming today. That's what the hope was.
We'll tease people a little bit longer. But fortunately, we have lots of cool mailbags to hit. And I think eventually, in the next couple of weeks, hopefully, we are going to start a weekly mailbag segment for all these great letters. So we don't have to let them get stale in our email box.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll get them on the show just like that.
Yep.
That's me snapping.
Keep emailing us everything you want us to talk about, and we'll be sure to mention it on the show and bring it up and address your questions for the whole nation instead of doing this big lump. Although I like having this thing to fall back on every once in a while.
Exactly.
It's nice to pass out a lot of advice or whatever at once. So.
All right, and you can email those great letters to podcast@antiupmagazine.com.
Correct.
And not A-N-T-I magazine.com. Because my dad was asking that, so you couldn't get A-N-T-I because you're not getting a license plate.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like... What? Huh? why would I want that? So, yes, A-N-T-E. All
right. Ante up.
All right, we're going to start us off here with a great letter from Alan Stewart. Chris.
Go ahead.
I asked you to.
Oh, you want me to do it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I thought you said we're going to start off.
Well.
Okay. He says he haven't had a chance to listen to this week's show yet, and I'm assuming he's talking about last week.
That's last week's, yep.
But after looking at the title, I was curious if you all thought about maybe having people send in whether or not they met their poker predictions in 2008. For him, he made a prediction that he'd win enough money for a flat screen TV.
Yes, very nice.
And they would put a small plaque on it that read, "Paid for by the donkeys at Poker Stars," or something to that effect. He says he didn't win enough for a 42-inch, but he did win enough to make a withdrawal and pay for a Nintendo Wii.
Yes, awesome.
With a couple of extra controllers and an extra game.
He needs to send us his Mii.
His Mii. Technically, he says, if I got a smaller flat screen, I could have met my goal. Instead, I went with something a little cheaper and a lot more fun for the family, since the old TV works just fine. Anyway, it was just a thought, and... wanted to know if that's something that we should
do. You know, we totally forgot, so I wonder if other people had good predictions and whether they came true. And you know, I wonder what his specific prediction or resolution was, because he said he could go smaller and still qualify. So did he just say any flat screen TV?
Yeah, I think he probably said, I want to win enough to make a flat screen TV, but ideally he's not thinking to put one in the kitchen.
Well, because you get like one of those little 4-inch ones, you know, and then say, but you know, I give him props for actually recognizing that his goal was...
You know what I love? Just when someone actually uses their damn bankroll.
Yes.
Because everybody I know, pretty much, they just keep the money in online and just inevitably lose it all, or it just sits there. I love it that people are actually taking it out and spending it on things. It's a good feeling, you know?
Yeah, you know, we got to help this economy out, so...
I wish I had taken that money from last night and spent it on something instead of handing it over to you on gut shots.
It's just on loan to me. He'll get it back. All right, so Matt Moody has sent us a couple of questions, and this is a three-parter.
Man, we've had this forever. We've been waiting to use this one for a long time.
Yes, yeah. He's probably already, you know, graduated from college. And
he's probably already moved on. And, he doesn't even listen to the show anymore. But we're going to answer your question.
Retired
anyway.
To Boca.
That's Boca Raton, for those of you who don't know.
All right, this is all about min-raising.
Yeah,
very controversial.
We always hate the min-raise. We always give Colombo crap for it. Min-raises, we hate them.
Though I may be softening. We'll see.
All right.
So anyhow, very quickly, Matt says he has been playing a lot of online poker recently, but when he was playing a lot, he noticed a lot of min-raises in No Limit Hold'em were scary. The person min-raising could just have been lazy. But if it was preflop, it seemed to signal strength instead of weakness.
Like big hands, aces, and kings,
So in live play, you can't think of a weaker play in a tournament. And, of course, you agree, correct?
I do agree, but like I said in the past, that Alan Gehring guy, that he religiously follows that. I know people always email me after I say that, oh, Chris, it's a big stack tournament, and you're talking about totally different things, but I'm just saying... Some people like to do that. They like to just, they want action. They want to have some money in there to play for, knowing they have an edge. But, I hate the min-raise. I do. I hate it.
Well, he went on to talk about this woman that he played in a tournament who raised 5X in a move. And he said he took a little mental note that she was super aggressive, and he wanted to be sure he remembered that. And then later on, she min-raises, and a total of 4 times, he said. And he said the first time she had queen of spades, 4 of spades, and she outflushed him. So he says, now knowing that she is willing to overbet her good hands and that she min-raises other hands, should he be aggressive when she, or any other player that fits that as a gamble, min-raises again?
Okay, well, I have to think that we talk about the fact of when you take notes on players, you kind of put the question mark next to the note, and then they do it again and again. It cements that this is how they play. He saw 2 instances where she min-raised with suited connectors or just suited cards, trying to trying to at least put enough money in the pot that she could draw at her flushes if they got there, or straights in one of the hands cases. So, I think that if you feel like that's the way she plays when she has like marginal hands like that, I would be more aggressive with my big hands against her. Definitely, absolutely. I mean, what the hell are you playing for then? If you know this information and you don't utilize it, why not? You know, so absolutely, I would definitely be more aggressive toward her and pop it.
Yeah, and I think this woman clearly fits the pattern, I think. Kind of a normal pattern for a lot of beginning players is they have a good hand, they get worried, so they try to protect it, and then, you know, they got some weak hands, so then they've read somewhere, they heard somebody say, hey, you can't just limp in, you got to raise, so they just put them in raise.
I think he got a good, it seems like he got a good beat on her, and needs to act accordingly, you know? You got to be confident in your instincts and in your, you know, your reads.
All right, so his second question was about the min-raise flopping and tournament being the weakest play. We've already said that. And the last one, he says, when I get hands like Jack-Jack, should I play them differently slow play rather than bet 3 to 4x preflop, knowing I've been card dead, or should I stick to what has been successful for me in the past? And he went to this whole card dead stage.
I would never play Jack-Jack slow. I mean, unless I'm in the blinds maybe with somebody and trying to trap them. You know what they say about Jacks, you know? You can't win with them, you can't beat them, and whatever the hell the other thing is. You know? So, and you can't throw them away. So, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't slow play pocket jacks probably ever unless I absolutely knew what you had in your hand, or if it was blind against blind, you know, I might try to trap you or something. But really, slow playing jacks is really a... Not that I will go crazy with them, because, again, it's just one pair better than tens.
Right.
But, I mean, I'm going to at least try to make someone define their hand with that. You know,
if you're going to slow play them, you need to be able to get away from them.
Yeah. Be willing to throw them if you're going to slow play them. You know, anything over the board and then a bet, you might want to be willing to get let those hand go. So,
you know, for the longest time, we've always been criticizing the min-raise on the show, and I think rightfully so. But lately, I've been seeing a place where it seems to make sense, and particularly in these multi-tables in our area here that are designed to end after 3 or 4 hours or so. I mean, kind of quick tournaments. At the end, the blinds get so big.
Yeah,
versus the chips on the table, that there's really only like one big stack, and almost everybody else is fairly short stacked. And at that point, it seems to me that a min raise is effective. And I mean, you get to the point where everybody's like, "Oh, it's, you know, shove or fold." And I don't know. I think sometimes a min raise is going to be enough. Any kind of raise is going to be enough to get people out. And why risk more of your chips than you have to? Which is really the whole goal of poker, is to put in the right amount of chips.
Yeah, I guess particular situations can call for something like that. But generally, most tournaments, at least at these levels, you're starting out with enough chips that a 3X or a 4X is or even 2.5X at least, is probably the right play. But I think that, and you might be right, and when those tournaments escalate so fast with their blinds.
Yeah, I mean, most people are down to 5 big blinds at some point. You know, it's really an all-in fest. But if you can make a min-raise and no one wants to be the next one out, that's enough, I think.
Yeah, you might be right.
So that might be the one place where a min-raise is good.
Well, good question, Matt. Thanks for it sparked a lot of thoughts there. I'm still against the min-raise, though, but like you said, there might be a situation where you want to do it. And never slow play jacks unless you absolutely know you can get rid of the hand. Oh, all right, this next one's from our friend Jason Booker. And I say our friend and mean it this time because I've been to his house many times.
We've
lovely family.
Yes.
Fun kids. Great dad. So I know the people. Some of the people he invites to the home game, a little questionable. But, all right, so he goes by JLB
Socks. Do they
call
big bets and hit cut shots? Is that why they're questionable?
Yeah. No, that's not it. He says he played an interesting knockout tournament recently. It was a 90-player 10+1, and he won the tournament, but only knocked out one player, and that was the guy who came in second. Obviously,
that's pretty cool.
Immediately after winning, I was thinking about how much more money I would have won had it not been a knockout tourney. However, after sleeping on it, I think it may have been very much to my benefit playing this type of tournament. He says, why? Because people were so desperate to get that lousy $2 knockout bonus, they played like fools. Fools, yeah. I tell you, fools!
Yes, absolutely. I've totally seen these in these knockout tournaments.
He said he was riding an average stack going into the final two tables. The tourney paid the final 9. He got very short with about 12 left in the tournament and went on a super tight, patient mode. I squeaked into the final table with a little more than 3K. He said it was just above the starting stack, which is about 3,000. And, so he was super short stacked. He said, what happened at the final table was fascinating. I shipped early, got called, and won with King 10 and increased my stack size to a little over 10 grand. No big deal. I hovered around 10K by stealing the blinds a couple of times. Finally, I picked up King King in early position. I shipped and was called by 3 players. Here were the following hands that called me. Ace 9 offsuit, 5-7 suited, J9 offsuit. So Jack 9 off. And then he says, WTF. How did these people make it to the final table? He says, none of them were in position where they had to call me. They just wanted my $2 bounty. He said, I won the hand and was up more than 40K. And so, you know, he says he ended up just, you know, winning the tournament. But what do you think about that?
Yeah, knockout tournaments are a very odd bird. It makes people do crazy things.
Yeah, he says, you know, his point is that he doesn't think people would make these donk-tastic plays if it were not for the knockout structure, you know? He may have collected only one bounty, but he won $230. So, I mean, yeah, it's amazing what people will do for bounties, you know?
Well, I think we talked about knockout tournaments a while back. I mean, I think to really make your money in them, you have to play for the knockout. That doesn't mean you have to call a bunch of all-ins with Jack 9 off. But, yeah, I mean, he's right. I mean, he's upset because had this not been a knockout tournament, he would have deposit a lot more in his online account for winning this tournament.
But then he might not have won the tournament had they not been.
That's
like
true. So I guess you got to you know, weigh that. But you know, if you're a knockout tournament, I think you're in there to play for the knockouts,
yeah.
And you got to do it smartly. That's the key. I don't think a lot of these people in knockout tournaments think about strategically how to accumulate knockouts. They just think about, hey, somebody's all in. All right, I'm going to call. It's $2. I can win.
Hey, you know, one of the things that I always ask the pros when they come to town for these tournaments is, you know, do you find that you have to adjust your play for these tournaments because they always have bounties on their heads or because people want to say, I knocked out Gavin Smith?
Yeah.
And inevitably, they almost always say, yeah, you got to play a little tighter. Gavin started to say that, and then he was like, no, you know what? I just play my game. Because, you know, really, and I like that too because the reason I like it is because if I'm at the table with Gavin Smith, I want to know that I'm playing against Gavin Smith and not...
And that's an excellent point.
And not tight, not wanting to go out, be embarrassed by some schmo at Sarasota. You know, this is... You know, I want to know that I'm playing against the Gavin Smith who's trying... You know, but I mean, I know he doesn't take it very seriously because these buy-ins are... You know, he sneezes and more money falls out of his nose than the buy-ins that are here, but...
Well, it's like striking out Babe Ruth at the end of his career.
Yeah.
Can't really brag about it, right?
Exactly. So, although, you know... He had a really big game his last game. He had like 3 home runs
in
his last game.
Yeah, that's true.
Quit
all right.
So.
Okay.
But,
well,
yeah, no. So,
way to, like, you know, stomp on my analogy there. Thanks. Appreciate it. Good job.
But it is interesting.
Yeah,
it is interesting.
Perfect, yeah.
These bounty tournaments, you know, the way they make people play. And most of the time, the pros do change the way they play. So to see these guys calling all in with 6-5s or whatever and Jack 9 off.
Oh, well, maybe they're late to the melting pot.
Oh, yeah. They're craving a $2 bounty, yet they can afford a $900 bill at the melting pot. I doubt it.
All right, Chris. Kirk from Fargo, North Dakota. I wonder if he lives near Francis McDormand or William H. Macy.
Mm.
And I wonder how many times he's getting that joke.
Yeah, I'm sure one time too many, at least.
But he wrote in soon after our show where we joked about the different avatars and what you could do with them that would be funny. And he says he has a new one, Chris.
Oh, cool.
That he thinks will revolutionize poker.
And he's sharing it with thousands of people.
Exactly. See, that's what I love about the animation. We just throw stuff out there,
let
somebody else go and do it.
And let them be rich on our great ideas.
Exactly. He says, literally within the last 15 minutes, he had suffered back-to-back 2-outers. Sounds like he's been playing with you.
Yeah, I was saying it.
Or playing on your account.
That was me last night.
In the last 2 pots he played, getting stacked both times. Ouch. And he said, all he could think about is this, that he would pay anything, Chris, and anything, all caps. He means it. Anything for his online room to have table representations like Party Poker did, and have an actual dealer on the screen so I could casually hit my F5 button and watch my angry face penguin avatar stand up, turn to his left, and urinate all over this pathetic dealer like I was in Atlantic City.
Oh, man, that would be unbelievable. So
I think they have that on goldenshowerpoker.com.
Now, if he was a penguin, would it come out all like a yellow icicle? Now, let me ask you this. Now, when he says this, does he want the entire table to watch him urinate?
Oh, of course.
Or
I mean,
is it just
for full
he gets to see himself do it and just make himself feel better, and that way no one else is offended by watching him, you know?
I mean, imagine that in a live tournament. You're just like, you all right?
All right.
I lost in the end. Somebody's got to take care of this, and you stand up and just let it whiz.
Man.
That's a story you're never going to forget, right?
Oh, man.
So better yet, I think, you know, what they need is a poker room where they have some, like, open source coding or something. See, I'm throwing out words. I don't even know what it means.
I don't know what that means.
But where poker players can design their own kind of shenanigans like this.
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool if you
just
could,
like a dance-off.
You never play any hands, though. Everybody be standing up doing all their thing, and the dealer's like waiting to deal the cards because you're busy pissing on them.
Well,
you know,
it would be like a time rake kind of online room.
So
gets the money.
That's right. Okay, you can do whatever you want with your avatar, but we're going to take money from you no matter how long you sit here. That's pretty funny. All right, this next one comes from Michael Cantor. and it's about poor online etiquette. He said he forwarded us an exchange that he had with one of the local rooms, online rooms, I mean, support. He was playing with a player in a sit-and-go, and he made what he considered inappropriate game-related comments. And he actually sent us the hand histories. But basically, he was down to almost no chips, and he knew he was going to fold. So he said, raise to a player before me, hoping to knock me out. He later did the same thing, this time saying, raise all in after I'd called. Luckily, I folded since my two pair would have lost to a flush on the river.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
After the first incident and winning the hand, I told him I'd be reporting him to the support. And I think their response was appropriate. He felt somewhat vindicated, but in his anger, he wanted to see this guy banned. The sweet irony of it all was that he made the greatest comeback of his life with only 110 chips, and he won the tournament.
Awesome.
He says, one other thing. I guess he's making a trip out to Vegas. We don't need to talk about that.
Yeah, real cheap, though.
Yeah, he got a real cheap. So apparently rooms in Vegas are cheap right now, so look it up, you know. Anyway, what do you think about this sort of stuff that's being said at the table?
Well, again, I mean, it sounds like, this room gave him warning, gave this person warning, and I think that's the appropriate way to do it. Because, you know, again, the internet thinks just people are not themselves, or maybe they are themselves on the internet. The thing is, they're just fake in real life. But,
yeah,
you know, they say all kinds of stuff. They just don't think about it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you need to let people know that, hey, that's... I mean, I think about how many times have you been in a, you know, low-limit game in a real casino or in a home game where people just don't know the etiquette and just think it's fine to say stuff like, oh, I folded a four! You know, that kind of stuff. So you need to learn somewhere. So, I think a warning is right, and then you got to get aggressive with them. But I think getting a ban right away might be.
Yeah, I think a ban is.
It might make you feel better, but that's probably not appropriate.
Yeah, that's a little extreme. I often wonder if there should be chat at all. I mean, I realize for the apes thing
part of the
and for your
thing,
friend,
yeah.
social thing, but sometimes
and you have the ability to turn it off if you don't.
You
want,
can turn
it
off,
so,
but you
yeah.
can't stop them from saying shove all in. You know what I mean?
Well, okay,
that's what
yes,
I'm saying.
That's true.
You
that's
know?
True.
I just wonder if there's action being made, no one should be able to talk, you know?
Well, yeah, but it's sitting alive. I mean, you can't, like, you know...
Yeah, I know.
Rip everybody's vocal cords out of their mouth when they sit down at the
I
table.
I know, and I'm not saying you should do that. It's just, there's really, the only way you could do it is if you do... And so the only thing you could do is what he did, so I think it was done, it was handled properly.
I mean, it's unfortunate that stuff kind of happens, but, you know, it's better than not telling anyone and letting this guy continue to do it.
All right, well, continue to send us your letters. We really appreciate it. We love talking to the AMP Nation and getting their feedback. And remember, podcast at anteupmagazine.com.
It's not just a dealer button. It's more than a tournament timer. It's Pro Dealer Button. And it's a synchronized poker game management system. The buttons talk to each other, so every table in your home game is on the same page at all times. Pre-order yours today at prodealerbuttons.com. Use the code ANTEUP05 and save 5% on your order.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown.
This is Downtown Chad Brown, and I'm in the studio with Ante Up.
All right, Chris, it's our great poker hands hand of the week.
Sweet.
And this one comes all the way from jolly old England and soon to be Sweden.
He's moving to Sweden?
He is.
Oh, okay.
He
I thought you meant England was soon to be Sweden. Like, I know they're going to be like invading them or something.
Yeah, you really need to renew your subscription to the newspaper so you keep up with all the goings on in the European
I
theater.
I didn't know Sweden was invading.
No, hand comes from Anders. Anders?
Anders? Anders? Anders?
I don't know. But he makes fun of your baton in the hand, so I'll make sure I get his name pronounced correctly.
Thanks, buddy.
And but no, he lives in England now, but he's getting ready to move to Sweden.
Okay.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Bundle up. Bring a sweater.
All right, and I love this hand, too, because this might be our first hand of the week involving pounds.
I hope he likes meatballs. Pounds. Interesting.
Wow, you really are an ugly American, aren't you?
I am. Nah, of course I am.
Or IKEA, right? You can get Swedish meatball, but that's the IKEA. Maybe he really likes blondes, too. Let's get all the stereotypes out of the way. All right, this one involves pounds.
Excellent.
Not in the
not that he's heavier.
LBS period pounds, but in the British unit of currency, correct?
Which kicks our dollar.
Yes, exactly. Much more valuable
all the time.
All right, it's a live, no limit hold'em, £1 game.
Cool.
At the Victoria Casino in London. I need to get across the pond because I want to play in some of these nice casinos that I
even drew the little L.
Did you?
So that you know, I could do dollars. I guess
it is an L, isn't it?
It's an L.
Never thought about that.
Yeah, I drew a little L.
It's a cool symbol.
Yeah.
All right. So he says the game usually plays quite loose with many passive players, but a few good aggressive ones. Well, that's a recipe for confusion.
Okay.
And this hand comes around 2:30 a.m., my perfect time for playing poker.
That's when I was getting home last night still. MFing you.
Our hero here has been at the table for about 4 hours, and most players at the table have been there all that time, so he has a reasonable idea how they play. That's good.
Yeah.
And a couple of new players have sat down. Some people are sitting out, so the game is seven-handed at this point, Chris.
Okay, let's get to it.
He is up to 350 from his initial buy-in of 100, and the other stacks range from 50 to 300. Remember, this is pounds, which is about $5,000.
Yeah, it's about $5,000.
All right. And he's on the baton for this hand. The under the gun raises to 4, a relatively small raise at this table, he says. And the under gun player here has 150. Under the gun plus 1 calls. He's one of the better players at the table. Solid play, and he has 250 in front of him. The cutoff calls. He's one of the smaller stacks at the table. And now the action gets to us, Chris.
Okay,
and
we
look
we have?
Down at the nuts.
Aces.
3-4 off suit.
Oh, jeez. I'm tired of these hands.
So obviously he calls, he says.
I'm tired of these hands, man.
I like where this is going.
We need to get a new hand of the week. So I'll wait for you. I'll wait for you. Go get another hand of the week.
All right, so it was a weak raise. So it was a bunch of callers. So he's got pot odds to play the second worst hand in the poker, right? Well, not second worst, but
well, it's pretty bad. We have 3-4 off.
3-4 off.
All right.
The nuts.
Yeah. That's all right. Whatever.
So obviously, you know, he's taking a shot.
I mean, everybody does that. Yeah, every once in a while, they'll take a shot, especially when you're up 250 pounds. Like I said, it's like, you know, can actually afford to send
you can buy a car.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, we call. Obviously, we're not raising, so we would have mucked if we're playing ABC Poker. But since we're having hand of the week, we know he doesn't do that. Obviously, we're going to call with this and try to bust somebody.
Now, he also made the point that the stacks that he's up against are deep enough that if he actually does hit a miracle flop here, he's going to get paid off, which is probably important. You know, if you're playing against a bunch of short stacks, this play is even
it's
more borderline.
Yeah, it's weak.
Yep. All right, so the small blind folds, the big blind calls, and we go to a flop that is 5-6-7 rainbow.
Okay.
See? What kind of hit?
We have the ass end.
Yes.
The low end. The ignorant end. The dummy end.
The donkey end.
Yeah.
Right.
The small end of the straight.
He calls it the bottom end.
The bottom end. There's all kinds of ways to call it.
A little more civil over there in England.
The ignorant end.
And he feels quite confident he has the best hand now. I probably would agree with him. The big blind checks under the gun. Bets 15. Under the gun plus 1 calls. Cut off. Now moves all in for 48.
Wow.
We weren't expecting this much action, I don't think.
It's only 48 pounds, though?
48 pounds.
I'd min raise. That's what I would do. Because I love min raises.
Oh, you found one more spot where we can min raise. Very nice. Very, very nice.
I'd min raise to isolate and take down a nice $80, $90 pot.
Yeah, all right. Well, you're going to love this. He says he thinks there's a wide range of hands that the cutoff would do this with, and he overpaired 2 pairs, a set, a pair, plus a straight draw. So he's still confident that he's ahead, so he raises and makes it a total of 100.
That's almost a min raise.
It's slightly more than a min raise.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I'd do the same thing, probably.
And he says he's doing it to let the players know that he's committed to this pot, and he wants to play the hand out with the cutoff.
Yeah.
I don't know whether a min raise actually says that, but well, I mean, it's I know, a lot of money to call.
You go from, you know, what?
15, I mean.
Yeah, 10 pounds or whatever, 15 pounds to 100.
Blinds have to call home. They're going to have cold, and the other ones have to call.
They have to know their beat there.
Yeah.
Unless they have, you know, 8-9.
Yeah, and slow playing.
All right.
All right, so the big blind under the gun gets out of the way, but the under the gun plus 1 thinks a bit and moves all in for 223.
Yeah. And the other guy folds, right?
Well, the other guy was all in already.
Oh, yeah. No, that's right. So I'm calling.
So 123 more to us.
I got a call and hope they don't have 8-9. Hope they have a set and don't pair the board.
Yeah, and he says the problem here is that 8-9 is very much in the range of the under the gun plus 1. If that's what he has, he's pretty much crushed, which I say, no, you're definitely crushed.
Yeah, he definitely crushed. Yeah. Not pretty much.
On the other hand, he's getting good pot odds. I love this. Pot odds, that helps you do all kinds of crazy things. And you also do the same with a bunch of other hands. So he calls.
What's he turn over?
Under the gun, flips over. 7-7.
See, set.
Top set.
You gotta hope.
Cutoff has 9-9.
Yeah.
And just hoping the board doesn't pair. Turn comes a 4, and the river is a...
7.
Oh, that would be exciting.
For quads?
No, it's 8.
It's an 8, so he...
So the cutoff wins the main pot with the 9 high straight, and the... our hero in the undergun plus 1 chopped the side pot with the straight. That's on the board now.
Sad.
The bad end of the straight. What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do? It's not... obviously you don't play this hand to, normally you don't play this hand at all. So if you're going to play it, you got to play it the way you did. You know, you made your straight. What are the odds? Somebody's going to have a 9 that's going to get runner-runner to make a, better straight. And 8-9, although 8-9 is a possibility, it doesn't seem like it would have been the way it was played. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, set and the pair over pair, wow.
I think the best part about this hand was that it was in pounds. Other than that, it wasn't that good. It wasn't that good of a hand.
Well, regardless of how good of a hand Chris thinks it is, Anders, we are sending you a great set of great poker hands cards. And everybody else, send us your hands of the week, podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and you'll have the chance to have Chris mock you on the air.
All right. Glad I don't have to relive last night's home game anymore.
Yet.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table. Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.